Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, Jay, David, and Vicki sit down and discuss this spring's growing conditions. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hello, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
How are y'all doing this morning?
Doing pretty good. I kind of glad I walked in. I think I walked in on my name being slurred or something. I'm not sure exactly what happened.
I wouldn't call it a slur.
I would call it a slur. Yeah.
Well, I'd call it being a team player.
Yeah, I was doing that.
That's what you were doing. David was off taking care of some 4-H responsibilities this morning. And
you bet.
That's always a good thing. In all honesty, everybody hates getting drug into a bunch of other stuff all the time. But to work with people, especially when you share an office, be able to have each other's back and step in and do for one another every once in a while, when you got that kind of magic, office magic, you could call it, that's pretty good stuff.
Well, quite honestly, when you have an office that works together and is helping each other out, you're making the whole office better. I mean, because the people in the community see that, they pick up on that, and those are the kinds of people that people are kind of drawn to work with. And so it's a good thing to cross those, in our world, cross those program lines a little bit and help when we can. But it's always good to stay in our lane too. So
I like my lane.
Yeah, I do too. I like mine too.
Well, as the song says, there's comfort in the curves, you know, when you're in your own lane.
Yep, that's right.
No, nothing wrong with that at all. So everybody's been out and about a little bit. I've been out this morning looking at some corn. And, you know, this time of the year, we expect to see certain things that aren't out there. We've got it's 2023, whenever you may be listening to this. And in our part of the world, we have had what I call an extra spring or a long, drawn-out spring. A lot of these years, we go from winter right into summer, but we certainly didn't do that this year. It started getting nice back the middle of March, and here we are in the nearly the end of May, and you know, Sunday morning when I went outside, it was 48 degrees. Mm-hmm. You could see your breath.
Yeah.
Different kind of a year. It's been long and drawn out, wet, cool, not ideal growing conditions.
Well, we've had all the seasons, if you will, here in the last month and a half or so. You know, we've had cool and wet and a little dry and hot, and we've had about all of it, right, you know, to be honest with you.
No, that's exactly right. We've had some humid days. We've had some cool days. And, you know, and it started out this year, like you said, Jay, it started out like we was going to have an early spring. And, I mean, conditions were so good. I mean, planting conditions, our farmers got out there and got the corn planted and the beans planted, and it looked like, well, we were off to a great start. And we were.
The first time.
Yeah, we were. Planted. And now we're getting to do all that over again in a lot of places. So
that's right. I mean, you know, I've been today alone. I've been from Hopkinsville to Owensboro back to Dixon, and I've seen lots of crop out in the field, and some looks really good, and some looks pretty tough. To be honest with you, a lot of the corn is really yellow, you know, and kind of like Vicki said before we started the show, you know, a lot of the soil just doesn't have any oxygen in it. It's a lot of that corn has just sobbed out. We've had so much water up in this area, not like in Christian County or towards Hopkinsville, but in this area, they've had anywhere from 6 to 10 inches.
That's
probably
right.
in that ballpark. So a lot of this corn did sob out, and just there's just nothing there. And you would go for long strips in the field, and there'll be nothing, and then all of a sudden there'll be a corn plant 6 inches tall, and for the next 500 feet or so, you know. So
yeah, it's been frustrating to say the least. I've talked to several farmers in my county here, which is in Webster County. In Kentucky, and we did have, it just in this county, we had 7 to 10 inches, depending on where you were, and it's unlike any, really, season that we've had, and I know we say that every year, and it is true, there are no two growing seasons alike, but from a replant standpoint, you know, you kind of expect a little bit sometimes to have some replantings in those fields that are just wet. We know that's going to happen.
Bottoms.
And yeah. I mean, we know you're going to have some, but this year we're talking larger numbers of replant. And what we're finding here, especially on some of that rolling ground, the corn is there, but the soil's washed away around it. And so, I mean, the seed is actually exposed in a lot of places. And that corn is not going to make it. It's not that root system is never going to develop. So if by chance it were a miracle that it did survive, as soon as it set an ear, it would go down because it just wouldn't have the root system it needs. And so, you know, that's just an example of where you got to get out there in the field and walk it, because from the road, from the truck, it looks like you got a pretty decent stand. You get out there and start looking around, and it's a little bit different situation than kind of what you were expecting.
You know, I've been aiming to ask y'all this for quite some time, and of course this area is different than the area that I grew up in and am in right now. And you know, a lot of no-till farming is going on back kind of west, south of here. You know, I wonder sometimes why there's not more going on up here.
I can tell you what I think it is, just from talking to my producers here, slugs. Back a few years ago, y'all remember, we had a terrible, terrible time with slugs. Oh. And it was on those no-till fields where they had cover. And ever since then, we have moved further and further away from no-till. You can ask them today, you know, have you ever thought about no-tilling? Well, I can't take a chance on the slugs. So, and that is a real issue. I was talking to Dr. Sure. Chad Lee last Friday, and he's in Lexington, and we were talking about some of this corn that here and some issues here where water's been over. We was just discussing different things. And, you know, they're in central Kentucky, and their plot, they've got some plots up there, and, I mean, they are covered up with slugs up there. And so that still is it's an issue, and that's what I talked to Chad about. I said, you know, you can't dispute the fact from a farmer's standpoint why, you know, why they're thinking on that. But then when you have a year like this one, you know, it's a give and take. And I think now there's some treatments out there now, though, that are going to be an option for slugs. I think they're kind of expensive, and I don't know enough to talk about it, actually. Okay. But I do think, David, to answer your question, I think that's it. I think the other thing is we have a lot of producers, most of ours, actually, are doing that vertical tillage or conservation tillage, minimal tillage, you know, multiple ways that they call that. So I think, too, that in their minds, they're still thinking it's kind of a little bit no-till. You know, it's a minimum till to them.
A minimum till, yeah.
Is what they're, you know, but.
But when it looks like that it's worked up, you know, and I talked to one guy that's a crop consultant, and he said he knew that the ground went over twice, and then they put the anhydrous down, and it went over it again. And then people wonder why it's washing. You know, I mean, I'm all good with the, you know, the vertical tillage, you know, one time and then you're planting. But, you know, if we're going over this stuff two or three times, you know, and this is a year, in normal years, it probably doesn't bite you too bad. But, you know, this year it probably bit you a little bit, and you may be doing some replant.
Yeah, most of ours are vertical tillage here, but they're replanting still the same.
Yep.
Before we get too far away from the slug issue, something I'll add in from my time in Christian County, not as widespread as the slug problem from a couple of years ago, but some of those continuous no-till issues historically have a lot of vole problems as well.
Yep.
And that's something to get away from it, you basically have to do away with that leaf litter on top of the ground. And there's a few ways of doing that. It's kind of hard to do it on a widespread area, but fire has been something a lot of people in localized areas have used to control that problem. But about
and you
the only
see a good bit of that around here.
You do. Mm-hmm. You do.
You really do.
You do.
So I kind of agree with Vicki. People look at that and say, well, there's other options. Yeah. And, you know, I could even think back in Christian County in my career, saw the no-till thing progress quite a bit. Now, you know, no-till's been around for a long, long time. But when I went to Christian County in the late 90s, it was probably 50-50, maybe. And it's quite a bit more than that now. probably the thing that has driven it in that area is it's a large wheat production area. Mm-hmm. And to be able to come back and no-till double crop beans into that wheat stubble makes it a lot easier and a lot quicker. You're going over the ground less times.
I think maybe we just need to be cognizant of the fields that we may be working so much and pay a little more attention. I mean, on the years like this that it really kind of bit us, and we had so much rain and it washed and we're going to have to replant and some different things like that. Maybe be a little more selective, maybe have a plan A and then jump back into a plan B.
That's
like
right.
We've talked about 100 times. But
right around late in the fall and look at some of these bean fields that had some type of tillage that spring. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's not enough leaf litter left over, not enough anything on top of the ground to keep them from washing.
And
when we start thinking about replanting, you know, because that's what's on our minds right now in corn, mm-hmm. particularly, is, you know, ever since these new technologies like Roundup Ready and all these other technologies that we have been able to enjoy from a weed control standpoint, makes it real difficult when we start thinking about how are we going to destroy the standing crop that's there. Because when you go in there and to replant it,
a disc.
You know, that's exactly talking about no-till. I mean, because
so now we're going to work it.
You're going to work
time,
it again because
fourth or fifth time.
There is some options, but it becomes very frustrating to try to kill that because you know you've got to get that corn killed before you start replanting because once that newly replanted corn's up, there is no rescue treatment to kill that volunteer. It's going to be considered a volunteer corn at that point or a weed. It's going to be a weed at that point, and you're going to fight it all year, and you don't want to do that. So again, like you just said, we're back to working those fields even more and to control them.
Yeah, and there's some bean fields that have the same problem as the corn fields.
Absolutely.
You know, Jay and I talked a bunch about a field that was planted that I go by that's in the north part of his county that was planted, and we had that cold snap. And, you know, and I was kind of worried, and you had expressed the same concerns that maybe it got bit, but it actually did not. And looks really good
right now.
I mean, it's probably three
or
4 inches.
Right there next to the exit?
Yeah, 3 or 4 inches tall, looks really good. But there's some other beans that got planted right before that rain started that, there's not anything coming up,
no,
not anything going to come up.
You know, Vicki talks about this all the time, about the importance of walking your fields. And this spring, I probably saw that come true more times than I ever have. And it goes back to when we had that cold snap. The information out there was the corn that's up is going to be fine. The beans, you know, you're going to have problems with. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot more beans that made it. And I've seen a lot more corn that needed replanting.
I agree.
And now all that the corn issue was not necessarily all tied to the cold snap.
Right.
But that didn't help it any. It started the process. It slowed it down. The continual rains and the washing and everything else is
I mean, the beauty of the corn is just, you know, the grown points below the ground until you get up to V6.
Right.
And I haven't seen any corn in my area to that level. I mean, to V6 yet. I mean, it'll get there quick, though, when it starts when we start getting warm nights, it really speeds up. But you're right, I think anytime a plant is under stress for whatever reason, so when that cold snap came through, it put that corn plant under stress, whether it killed it or not. It still put it under stress, and then you come along with the cooler temperatures
and then
all that
10
rain.
Inches of rain.
I was gonna say then being underwater.
I've got some that's been underwater 3 times.
Even the corn that has not been underwater is just as yellow as a pumpkin. You know, and just looks really bad. It definitely needs some warm weather. And you know, I don't know if it needs a shot of nitrogen or not. I don't know if they've put the nitrogen on
a lot of the side
or
those
if it's
the side
washed away
or
not.
Or if the nitrogen has washed away or if it's just not taking it. I mean, you know, we've just had so much water up here
and water complicates so many things. It's going to reduce or basically remove any weed control options that you'd started off with. Post applications are probably going to be necessary at some point in time, and something with some residual action.
Absolutely.
Hopefully.
Can't get into side dress it.
I've seen more corn fields that I can't hardly see the corn for the grass. This year than I can remember in the past.
Unless you
know, in
look
the last
just
four
right
or 5 years.
As you pass it and see that row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks as bad right now, I think, as any corn, especially up in this area.
Right.
Now, when you get down towards Hopkinsville, some places like that, I mean, they did not have the amount of water. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I ended up with like 2.5 inches at my house, something in that ballpark. The corn down there is, a neighbor of mine has probably got the best corn that I've seen, and you know, it's probably a foot tall or a little better, and it's just as dark green as it can possibly be. They've got they did the side dressing. Mm-hmm. They've got all that stuff done. So,
is that planted in strips?
Yeah,
that we were talking
planted
about?
Planted in the strips, and with the ryegrass in between, you know, and that kind of deal. It looks really, really looks good.
Several producers doing that down in that area, and it has. It's been a big hit.
Yeah, it looks as good as any I've seen anywhere.
Right.
You know, and most of the time, Jay, as you and I know, coming up through here, coming from Madisonville to Dixon is some of the better looking crop that there is in the country.
In this part of the world right now, it really is.
And it looks good now. You know, mm-hmm. it's not hardly as dark green as that corn there next to my house, but it still looks really, really good.
Part of that's a timing issue. I mean, that there next to your house is 50, 60 miles south of here.
Right.
And even though that doesn't seem that far away, that might be 2 weeks difference in planting time as far as the growing season goes.
That's right.
But, you know, I think we were pretty close this year on planting dates. You know, all this area. You know, I always say we're 2 weeks behind or a week behind or whatever up here if we are down there. But I'll be honest with you, this year they got – everybody's pretty close.
Window's getting it's getting closer. I mean, like we were talking about before the show, we was talking about wheat harvest and how it starts a lot you know, they start that a lot earlier now than they did a few years ago. But you're exactly right. We are used to, I would always say we was 2 weeks behind. I'd call it down south, you know, but we was 2 weeks behind, and it's not that way anymore. I mean,
no, I don't think so either. I think that window is more narrow, and especially with the advent of these beans being planted so much earlier.
Right.
Folks are really getting in the field, and there's lots of folks that plant a bunch of beans before they ever start planting corn.
That's what I was just fixing to say, you know, a full season bean.
Yeah.
You know, the thing this year that tied all that together, that window is moving earlier every year, but this year there was about a 8 to 10 day swing where all the conditions were right, not only weather wise,
for everybody.
I was going to say not just weather wise, but soil moisture wise that people could get in the field. And we saw everywhere you went in West Kentucky, people were planting corn and full season beans at that time.
And you know, you talk about changes and how things change over time. I know we've all talked about this just in conversations before, but you know, back a few years ago, when you think about, you know, getting your crop planted, I mean, it took them a month or a month and a half to get corn and beans planted. Now,
10 days,
they can be planted.
I said something to Alan Watts here the other morning on the radio, WKDZ radio station, that David and I both do shows at. And I've mentioned this to him before, but the biggest change in my career has been the change in the window of time that it takes a farmer to turn a crop around. Mm-hmm. Whether it's planting, whether it's getting everything sprayed to begin with, harvest in the fall, that window, they're doing more and more and more work, but it's getting into a shorter time frame every year. A lot of that's because of the technology, the size of the equipment they use, but it also comes from having a dedicated full-time labor source that's always on the farm. You're not just picking up help come harvest time. You've got full-time employees there.
Yeah. You know, when you got a 24-row planter, it doesn't take long to get across some ground.
That's right.
You know, there's a lot of farms that have two or three of those planters. And, you know, the amount of time that it takes to get that crop planted has just gotten so much better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and most people, if they're any decent size, you know, 5,000 to 7,000 acres, can probably plant every bit of their crop in 10, 12 days.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty easy.
Yeah, I knew one that did that this year, about 6,500 acres, and I think did it in 11 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's amazing how things change and how technologies change and
the, you know, the varieties they're planting have changed quite a bit to allow them to do that too.
And you know, you talk about that technology, and for folks that have never run a tractor or anything like that. Way back when, you had a row marker mm-hmm. that came out on the end of your planter, and you followed that. You put the middle of the hood of that tractor right in that, and so you followed that all day long. Well, now you've got the GPS and, you know, and all that mm-hmm. stuff, and you just, when you hit to the end of the row, you just make a turn and hit the button, and it drives itself. And, you know, I think operator comfort is gotten so much better, and you can work so much longer.
Yeah, you're not as mentally tired right. or physically tired.
Right. And you know, comfort is the right word, but most of those comforts are big safety factors.
That's right.
And that's the big thing about these cabbed machineries now as compared to open station machines. Yep. It's nice to have a radio. It's nice to have air conditioning, but those really are safety factors that mm-hmm. keep that person able to sit in that mm-hmm. piece of equipment for that yeah. amount of time.
Yeah, it's a lot different sitting in the cab than it used to be. If anybody sat in a cab that the air conditioning went out or, you know, any of those kind of things. I can remember rolling hay one time. I'll tell you the story. I was probably 19 or 20 and was rolling hay, and the air conditioning went out on a 4440 John mm-hmm. Deere. And when I got out of the tractor that evening, I had sweated through my boots that I had on, my leather boots that I had on that day. I had sweated through. There wasn't a dry stitch of clothes on me. And when I got with the wind, I would throw the door open and let the air come in. And of course, it was dust, you know, and I was mm-hmm. just covered up in dust. That was the worst experience I ever had. And I thought, I just soon have a tractor, didn't have a cab on it at all.
Yeah.
If I didn't have the air conditioning working, you yeah. know, that kind of deal. So if you've ever done that, and I've had that happen to me a time or two since on some newer tractors, and the air conditioning will just quit working, and it's a miserable feeling. Mm-hmm. So it is a lot better now that operator comfort has making so much, and the advances in technology that we have where you can do those things for a longer period of time and not be so tired,
yeah.
I think are some real advances in mm-hmm. agriculture that we've seen.
Talking about stories, when you said, you know, the row markers, that made me think of my dad. Mm-hmm. Is because, of course, you know, he farmed, and he's farmed all of his life. But anyway, when we'd be out in the field, or if I'd be out there, because I would go with Mom to bring supper to the field. I mean, mm-hmm. I was just, he did, you know, she brought supper to the field, they stopped, they ate, got back on tractor and went on. And my dad would always tell me, you know, don't stand there by that marker, because if it were to fall,
yeah.
if it were to come down, you know, it hurts you. And so, yeah. you know, I hadn't thought about a row marker in a long time. But when you said that, that's what immediately came to my mind.
Well, I think some of the new planters don't even have them on them anymore.
Right.
You know, some of them do. I think it just depends on what kind of setup you got on your tractor. But yeah. you can plant your end rows without having one as well, you know. So the advances in technology are just, it's crazy, the things that are out there right now. So
it is. I mean, the technologies and equipment is what we've been mm-hmm. talking about, but it's also amazing the technologies that's in the bag now.
All of them. Well, and in the chemistry programs that
I mean,
we work with.
It's just, you know, and so then when you start going back to that replant, when you start going back and thinking about that replant, you got to figure out what what you've got to know what options you have to kill it, mm-hmm. you know, and so, but it in most years, that's a good thing, yeah. all those new technologies. But
And a lot of corn coming up in a cornfield that's not in the row is not necessarily a good thing.
that's exactly right. It becomes a weed.
It becomes a weed.
It becomes a weed at that yep. point.
That's right.
So yeah. that's something a lot of these people that are having to replant have to contend with right mm-hmm. now, too, is how do you control that weed, especially mm-hmm. when you bought that seed to do a certain job mm-hmm. with a certain chemical.
Yeah, if you don't get it the first time.
Yeah, you know,
you're probably not going to in this.
You know, and we've talked about this a bunch of times, and you know, you need to be prepared for problems like this. You need to be thinking about, you know, well, what if I have to do a bunch of replants, you know, and am I going to go with a different chemistry? Am I going, you know, how am I going to handle that? And I don't see it as much down where I live as much as I do up here mm-hmm. because you've got so much water up here. You've got lots of bottoms mm-hmm. that the water gets out on and different things of this nature. So I think you got to be a little more flexible up here, you know, in dealing with those situations.
And some of the options too, you know, this time of year become really non-existent, just like using paraquat. I mean, you can spray that early because there's really nothing else around. But now, if you've got beans beside you or something like that, you know, that can take that option out, you know.
Things that you did during that early burn down, 2,4-D would be another example.
That you can't do, you know, this time of year because of your surroundings or, you know, something that's going to cause you to have a delay on planting or you have to hold back 6 days for planting. Well, if it's the 23rd of May on the second time of planting, they're not going to be too eager to wait 6 days to plant it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know you've got tobacco that's been set out there, so you've got a lot of different obstacles is a good word that you've got to get around, and so you know you need to put some thought into that. No kidding.
Well, this rainy season that we've talked about, it's been tough on the grain folks for sure, and we've talked about that. But David, it's been a little bit hard on our livestock operations too, hadn't it?
Yeah, it has a little bit. Probably, you know, folks have probably not gotten hay cut when they really really wanted to, and. You know, the quality always goes backwards, you know, and I'm kind of different than most folks. I usually don't get too stirred up about hay cutting until we get past the 1st of June, and then I get stirred up because it should have done been cut. Yeah, I agree. I like to put up dry hay because we put all our hay inside, so I usually don't get too stirred about cutting any hay until kind of that last week to the third week of, if we can catch a really good time during that period of time, which is what we're in right in the middle of right now.
Yes.
And we cut hay the last couple of days. But anyway, you know, all of that hay should have been cut the 1st of May. I agree. You know, there's no doubt in that. But just putting up dry hay and putting up really, really good hay quality-wise don't go together a lot of times. So, I mean, we've had so much rain, you know, that's what caused all the corn and soybeans to have problems with. But, you know, right now has been a perfect time. And, you know, hopefully we'll get some more of those throughout the year. And, you know, we just did some shows on with Dr. Chris Teutsch about summer annuals and things. If you don't have enough hay, and I'll be honest with you, I've cut some fields that looked really, really bad, and I've cut some fields that were really, really good. So I don't know what to tell you. I don't know why. I don't, you know, they were treated the same and all of that kind of stuff, and the grass species are the same, and I don't know.
We're
different.
Still dealing with some of that hangover from it being so dry last year. Is, you know, a lot of people think you can't kill fescue, but you can. We've seen it, especially this past year. Some it just died completely out, and it was so dry so late that we couldn't do any type of renovations in the fall, or maybe very little.
You know, we even put some fertilizer on a pasture. We normally try not to cut our pastures for hay, but this year we were short because we had to start feeding in August last year. And so we were going to cut this one pasture, but I'll be honest with you, it's not that good. It's probably some of the worst hay that I've cut, to be honest. And I think having those cows in there, and of course we stockpiled that to a sense. We didn't put any fertilizer on it, but we didn't graze them. So they've only been on that pasture for about a week, you know, in the, I forget, that's been, what, November, about 5 months. They've been on there for a week, and the hay's not that good, you know. So I think we're going to run into some of those issues. I think there's going to be some people that are going to find some of their hay's pretty good, and some of it's not very good. And I probably cut some of the best hay that I've cut all year yesterday afternoon, and it was sure enough good. Orchard grass was good. It's probably chest tall. I mean, it's probably some of the better hay I've been in several years. So why that is, I don't know, you know. And the field right next to it was just okay.
That's farming.
Stuff that looks really good right now probably had the better stand last fall.
I'm sure. And so anyway, we need to be sure, just a couple of reminders to folks, if you're going to put that hay inside, be sure to make sure it's dry. You know, give it, if you need to give it an extra day, give it an extra day. You know, we've caught a window here of probably going to look about 10 days or so. That's going to be pretty good. If you can let it go another day, if you're going to put it inside, try to do that.
Yeah.
I tedded some yesterday afternoon that we had cut on Sunday. There were some green spots in it. I probably could have rolled it today, but I had to go to work today. But I think, you know, it'll be sure enough dry by tomorrow, you know. So, and there's folks that are doing some wrapping and some different things like that, and those are good things too. Be sure to put enough plastic on there. Make sure that you get it, because especially if it's wet and you want it to ensile, if it gets any oxygen whatsoever, any oxygen, it won't ensile properly, and you've lost that bale. That bale's mm-hmm. no good. Matter of fact, it could be dangerous to feed it to your livestock. Absolutely. So, you know, be sure to get enough plastic on that.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that helps folks cutting hay right now in this 10-day window you're talking about, depending on where you are, is a lot of the ground, as you mentioned, was already starting to get dry in places, so it had a dry base underneath it. Just because the sun's shining, you go to cutting hay and you've got that wet ground underneath it, that's going to add to the amount of time it takes for that hay to cure. So we had a lot of drier ground as hay started getting cut this spring.
Yeah, you know, and we had some rain Saturday morning, I think, Friday night, Saturday morning.
Depending on where you're at, it was a little more than others.
That's right.
At my house, it wasn't that much. That
right,
morning.
Right. You know, and I never did even look at the gauge, but you could have started cutting hay that afternoon. But the water was standing Sunday morning there, or Saturday morning, I'm sorry, Saturday morning. But anyway, you know, people just need to be careful. You know, we don't want any barn fires or
no.
we don't want anything like that.
No,
so,
we don't.
You know, this is the time of year when a lot of that happens. And it's not going to catch on fire tomorrow if you put it in there today. It's going to be a week or two,
right.
three.
Takes a while to build
takes
up.
Takes a little while to build up, and you need to keep a check on that. And I always try to check on ours, even though I try to put up really dry hay. I always try to keep a check for about a month, you know, after we put that in there. And because you can smell, you know, it's got a different aroma when it's starting to heat
right.
up. And, you know,
it starts
folks,
off kind of sweet. And then you get that yeah. caramelized smell, and
yeah.
you know what's coming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, folks just need to be careful with that and, you know, do a good job. And I encourage people to if you're not going to put your hay in a barn, if you put up really good hay, try to wrap it, try to put plastic, try to cover it. I mean, they've got these tarps now, these hay tarps and different things of this nature that you can put the hay under, because you've done all this work to make really good hay, and then you're going to set it outside
well,
until January. I mean, think about the amount of waste that's going to be there. You know, I mean, you're looking 6-8 inches of that row is not going to be some big count.
Backing up to the fire issue, you were talking about the we see a lot of money spent on hay equipment.
Yeah, we
but
do.
One of the cheapest tools you can have is that moisture tester with a thermometer on it.
Yep.
Checking those rows, you can see that heat start to change after they've been baled 3 days, 4 days, mm-hmm. if you hadn't got them in. That's, to me, it's like insurance. It's one of the cheapest tools you can have. And anybody that's putting up very much hay ought to have a hay probe
yep.
to where they can test that hay in the fall, but they also ought to have a temperature gauge and a moisture meter to
mm-hmm.
to be able to make it what it's supposed to be.
Yep.
And talking about testing and talking about things that we need to do is think about getting a hay sample and testing the quality of that hay too. Just like you said, David, you've got some hay that's the best you've had, and you've got some mm-hmm. that's not going to be very good, and you're yeah. not alone in that. That's every producer every year, you know. And but that's good use of money, too,
mm-hmm.
So you know what supplements you need to be feeding for mm-hmm. your cattle herd. And it's just a good time to remind folks to while you're working in hay and mm-hmm. all of that to think about getting some of those samples taken and sent in.
And, you know, And I don't mean to sound bad, but thin hay makes good hay too. You just got to have a lot more of
yeah.
it.
That's right.
You
yeah.
know,
exactly
so
right.
You know, just because you got thin hay doesn't mean it's not any count.
That's right.
You know, it's just, you know, you still need to do a good job getting it up, but it's just not going to be as much of it. But you know, I think you're going to find that when you get into some of these fields this spring and summer, is that some of it's going to be better than others. And I'm like Jay. I think the after effects of last year's drought are probably more to contribute about this than anything. The hay that the best hay that I cut doesn't have any cows on it, never does have any cows on it so far.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not a fence around it where we can graze them. But, you know, and then, like I said, the worst hay I cut was probably that had grazed on it, you know, from probably July, those cows grazed that for about a week. Until yesterday or Sunday. So, I mean, that makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. And it had fertilizer put on it, P and K and nitrogen put right. on it as well. So, I mean, it just makes a difference. Mm-hmm. It's just struggling. You know, it's just struggling. It's
well, and you know, the soil, all things, all other things being equal, there's a lot of differences in mm-hmm. soil. And soil compacts differently in some places. It does others, depending on the clay mm-hmm. content. There where your farm is, there's probably a little bit of clay in certain parts of that.
Yeah, and it's pretty rolling. It's on the backside, got lots of rocks and sinkholes and all the good stuff that we grow there
that we
on
have
our farm.
In that part of the world. Yeah, yeah.
And we grow it really good. We've got lots of sinkholes and lots of rocks. So, and that's why we got cattle on it. So,
David, when you and I were driving to the meeting the other day that we mm-hmm. had, you know, we
Vicky went to Pinckneyville.
I did. I don't know that
Do you
I
know where Pinckney
is. I absolutely know where Pinckneyville is.
I don't know that I could get back, but.
Yeah. And we went through
Dykesburg.
She's never been Dykesburg.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That big curve.
Yes.
You got to make that curve or you'll end up in the river.
If you don't make the curve, you're going to be in a bad place.
I told Vicky, I said, you watch how they say Dykesburg down here. I said, they say it just like that, Dykesburg.
And they did. Yeah. And they did.
I bet y'all cut all the way through, went to Pinckneyville, and then took a left, didn't you?
Yes. Yes,
well,
that's great.
It was a road I'd never traveled on, but I can say I've been on that road now. Mm-hmm. And on along that road, I believe it was that road that we saw some poison hemlock.
Oh yeah.
And not on just that road, by the way. It's a lot of places, but David and I were talking that day about, you know, just we're seeing that a lot more than we used to. I mean, you're seeing it even, you know, a lot on the roadsides, and that's something that, you know, to keep an eye out for too.
You know, I cut through the country coming back from Owensboro to back to Calhoun, and I actually saw a couple of places that had just big. It was almost like a grove of it. Never seen it that thick mm-hmm. in a place. But the funny thing that I did see was that in my travels here in the last week or so, you know, it goes from anywhere from 6 feet tall to 6 inches tall right beside each other. And I think folks really need to pay attention on that and, you know, to try to get that stuff killed out. And I've been working on it. It's been in front of my house here for the last 2 or 3 years. And I guess the first year I really didn't know what it was and finally got it identified and have been trying to work on it. Mm-hmm. But I've had some that I've sprayed. Crossbow is probably your best bet. I sprayed some with some Tordon 22K, you know, and I hate to admit that, but that's all I had. And mm-hmm. so I went on and sprayed it. And some of that is, it actually suckered back out. Mm-hmm. So I have resprayed that. You know, I sprayed some yesterday. I found some in a hay field that I did not know I had right beside the road. So folks just need to be vigilant. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that's coming. And, you know, the bad part about it is if you're cutting it and getting it in your hay, it could still be poisonous to your cattle.
Right.
And horses or sheep or whatever you're feeding. So, and I'm not sure if this is just in this part of the world, kind of a Western Kentucky thing, or if this is all over Kentucky, I'm not sure. But I do know that it has gotten extremely worse in the last couple of years than it has been in the past.
And it resembles a couple other weeds. So sometimes it's you may think it's something else, you know, like Queen Anne's lace or mm-hmm. wild carrot. Mm-hmm. They do resemble each other. And so it can
up to a point.
Up to a point
it does.
Right, you know, and so just be on the lookout and make sure you got it correctly identified and what you have, and make sure that it's not poison hemlock.
Because you can get it on you, and it can cause some irritation as well. Yep. I mean, it's not just the only thing that it bothers as animals. You know, it can kind of, it's not exactly like poison ivy, but just a little bit kind of along those same lines. You know, it can cause you some irritations if you get it on you. So folks just need to be really careful.
Well, yeah, we just need to try to, if you see it, try to control it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, cut it, whatever we need to do, but just really try to manage that, because we don't want it to continue to get worse.
It's really probably something that ought to be more on the minds of, like, our county road departments and things like that, mm-hmm. because of where we end up seeing it a lot of times.
Yeah, exactly.
Is in those unmowed, unkept
yep.
areas.
Yep.
They do mow them and they do keep them up, but it's just as they do them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's on yeah. those roadways. I mean, that's where I see it and a lot is just along those roadways.
And yeah, and each individual plant can produce up to, like, 30,000 seeds and can stay viable for 3 to 6 years. So if you're listening to this, you need to understand this is not a one and done deal. This is not a 1 year. Well, I take care of it this year. That's not the way it's going to work. It's you're going to have to work on it, continually work on it, kind of like thistles. When I was a kid, I can't tell you how many truckloads of thistles that I dug up with a grubbing hoe.
Mm-hmm.
And put them in the back of my grandfather's truck, and we took them to a spot and burned them. I can't tell you how many. I'm not sure how he thought it was a really good idea for us to do that, but yet how did we get so many truckloads on our farm before I got there? You know,
he didn't have you to do it.
That's right. You know, I didn't really understand it, and he kind of instilled in me this whole passion to, you know, to get rid of thistles, and I work on them every year, and we don't hardly have any now. I mean, we have occasionally.
They pop
have
up.
Some.
I
yeah.
mean, you know, wind blows the seed in.
And right, and you're gonna have some occasionally, but this I think this could be substantially worse. This poison hemlock deal, if it gets in our pastures and different things, it could be substantially worse mm-hmm. than even thistles are.
Yeah. One of the best ways to work towards controlling your own weed problem is inspiring your neighbors to control theirs, because that's where a lot of these mm-hmm. things
you know,
will build up on if you're not
I hate not to say it, them. But I have walked over the fence row a time or two and did some thistle spraying.
Yeah.
I'm not too proud to admit that, but mm-hmm. Just to keep them from growing and blowing over on me.
Right.
Right.
You know, and I don't know as they ever knew I did it. These folks moved in. They were an Army family and moved mm-hmm. in, and they probably didn't even know, and that's okay. But I just, you know, to try to keep that from making my situation worse, mm-hmm. you know, try to go in there and control that too. So,
yeah, a lot of people see that this will run that seed head up and they want to go do something about it. They should have done something about it the year before.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's exactly right.
But, you know, you kind of, it's a good way to identify them.
It is.
And crossbow is another one of those good chemicals that you can take care of it when it gets that big.
Yeah.
When it's a lot smaller, you can take care of it with 2,4-D.
Catching them in that rosette stage, mm-hmm. they're much easier to control.
Sure.
There again, though, it takes getting out and walking your pastures and spending time over them. I remember when I was a kid, I thought that sprayer that would fit on the back of a three-wheeler, that was sent from heaven itself, mm-hmm. you know, because that was a way to get across the pasture in a short amount of time and
yep.
ride right up on those rosettes, give them mm-hmm. a squirt, and keep on going. Mm-hmm.
And
plus,
you know,
plus riding that three-wheeler was fun.
That's right. But, you know, the poison hemlock's the same deal. You know, it's a lot easier to control that when it's small than
yes.
when it does when it gets bigger. You know, I don't know if when we spray it with crossbow now and it's already bloomed out, I'm not sure that we're going to kill the seed or not. I'm not sure exactly how that works.
Mm-hmm.
But you just got to do what you got to do. And the problem with it being on the roadways is it's hard to see until it bolts up, you
right.
know, and then when
that's
it bolts
right.
up, you can see it really good. But the weeds and the grass are so thick a lot of times on the roadways, it's so hard to
it
pick
is.
Out,
right.
You know, and it's
well,
kind of a deep, dark green, but it's just so hard to pick out.
You mentioned those seeds being viable for 6 years, did
mm-hmm.
you say?
So 3 to 6.
Say yeah. you've got a problem like that that's left unchecked for 10 years of mm-hmm. seed distribution.
Exactly.
There you've got 30 to 60 years worth of plants you may have to contend with.
That's
so.
Exactly
and
right.
And that's what worries me about the whole being in the pasture and doing some different things like that. So, I mean, we can control it in crop fields and different places like
sure.
that. Roadways is going to be tough, and pasture and hay fields is going to be tough too. And please don't cut it. Just pull around it. And then do something
yes.
about it after that.
That's exactly right. That's what I was going to say. I was getting ready to say, don't
yeah.
spread the seed, whatever
right.
you do. Don't
right. don't make it worse.
Don't make it worse. And
yep.
and also, you know, most every weed out there, always remember, it's a whole lot easier to kill it the first time and to kill it when it's small.
Absolutely.
And most yep. of the time, to kill it the first time, you're going to have to kill it when it's small. Because if not,
yep.
you know, but once you've made it bad and it suckers out and comes on back out, it's a little bit tougher to kill then, too.
And, you know, and I'll point out real quick, when we used to have thistle problems so bad, you could just about go back there the next year and there'll be thistles there again. This poison hemlock's going to be the same deal. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But you're going to have to come back more than 1 year. It's going to be several years of coming back to the same spot.
And come early.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we always wrap things up with a timely tip, and if it hadn't been said once in this show, we'll say it one more time that it's the time of the year that you need to get out and walk your fields and be preparing for whatever weed pressures that you might find present. Review any post-weed control options and prepare accordingly. I think with as much moisture as we've had this spring, we're going to see some loss of any type of residual control that might have already been used. And time to get out, walk those fields, and see what you got so you can make the proper decisions down the road.
Absolutely. And that may be different than what you had planned back in the in the winter when you was thinking about what programs you was going to be going with, because that may have changed because of the changes that the way what the season gave us.
I say especially if you're planning on replanting, it's definitely going to change.
Yeah.
Because you're probably going to have to do something different to get rid of the rest of the remaining crop that you planted the first time.
So. Just like gambling. Just like gambling.
It is. It's farming.
Being a gambling addict, I believe you could make more money being a gambling addict than you could farming at times.
You know, people talk about farming and gambling. My dad used to say that years ago. I remember when the lottery first came out, everybody was, you know, afraid of gambling. It's going to ruin our country. I'm not saying it's good or it's bad, but my dad was a small businessman, and he always said that gambling was buying $1 million worth of inventory and sticking it in a warehouse and betting you could sell it and make a profit. That was gambling. And it goes the same way for farming. With the large investments we have nowadays, it's maybe a calculated risk for a lot of people. We have a lot of success going from year to year to year with what's worked before, but there's so many changes on the horizon that we've got to change to be willing to keep up with it.
Yeah, so. But that's it is a risk. There's no doubt about that.
Absolutely. So. Yep. No risk, no reward, right?
That's right.
Well, we want to say special thanks to our host. Between the three of us this week, we didn't have a guest, but thanks to our host for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.